It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price. Debate night in Vegas.
It will be Michael Bloomberg tonight in the open, on stage.
That is our top story at noon. The 2020 race for the White House heads to Vegas tonight, where, for the very first time, billionaire Mike Bloomberg will be on the stage with his fellow Democratic White House hopeful.
Mr. Bloomberg has every right in the world to run for president, but I don't think he has the right to buy this election.
Bloomberg's money will be fodder for tonight's big debate. The billionaire has spent over $350 million so far on his campaign. Former Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
Throwing colossal sums of money on television shows you what's wrong with our system.
Bloomberg will also face attacks tonight for his one-time support of the controversial police program known as Stop and Frisk. Late last year, Bloomberg apologized for that program.
I was wrong, and I'm sorry.
The top six Democratic presidential candidates will square off tonight in Vegas, start time 9 o'clock on NBC. Former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich praising President Trump for commuting his prison sentence yesterday.
Everlasting gratitude to President Trump for doing what he did.
Blagojevich returned to his Chicago home earlier today after serving 8 years of a 14-year prison term for federal corruption.
I'd like to have a banana split, and I'd like to have 3 scoops of ice cream, vanilla, and chocolate and strawberry.
The president also pardoned several other people, including former junk bond king Michael Milken and former New York City Police Commissioner Bernie Kerik. There's also speculation today Mr. Trump will pardon his longtime friend Roger Stone when he's sentenced tomorrow.
I think that this is going to raise a lot of eyebrows about why the president is going on a limb for defendants that so many people thought were righteously convicted.
That is law professor Jessica Levinson. Tensions between the White House and Justice Department continue to grow. Attorney General Bill Barr has reportedly told his staffers he considered quitting over Mr. Trump's tweets. The president himself even admits he makes life hard for his AG.
Yeah, I do make his job harder. I do agree with that. I think that's true.
Despite Bill Barr's rebuke of the president for commenting on cases, Mr. Trump says he'll continue to do it.
Social media for me has been very important because it gives me a voice. Because I don't get that voice in the press, in the media. I don't get that voice.
The Justice Department releasing a statement last night saying the Attorney General has no plans to step down. 79 new cases of the coronavirus have been confirmed on a cruise ship that's docked off the coast of Japan. It brings the total number on the Diamond Princess to more than 600. The news comes as a 2-week quarantine was lifted and passengers began to disembark. Laura Bicker is with the BBC.
Many of the people that are left on there are waiting for test results. There's also criticism of the Japanese health authorities for that, that it's taken so long to test everyone on the ship.
American Jerry Jorgensen tested positive for the coronavirus last week. She's in a Japanese hospital with no idea when she can get out.
I could be totally overwhelmed and gnash my teeth and scream and cuss and cry, but wow, if that's really what it's going to be, then that's what it's going to be.
More than 75,000 people have been infected with the coronavirus. Over 2,000 have died. More rain expected today in the Jackson, Mississippi area. This woman, among hundreds of residents who've been told to stay away from their flooded homes.
I've never seen it like this before. I just want to see my house. The last time I saw my house was on CNN, and the only thing I saw was the top of the mailbox. I wish somebody would just give me some answers.
Another 5 inches of rain possible this week in areas that have already seen up to 7 inches of rain the past 10 days. The NASCAR driver who crashed in the Daytona 500, now awake and talking in a Florida hospital, Ryan Newman, was involved in that fiery crash on the final lap of Monday's Great American Race. Still to come this Wednesday, youth tackle football in New York, Second Amendment Sanctuary in Pennsylvania, and a major contract for Lockheed Martin.
Good afternoon. We're looking at a cold pattern over the next 36 hours that will include some lake flakes for some. I'll be back with the complete forecast coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
Okay, Kevin Williams checking the stories, making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania this Wednesday, February 19th. A big backing for a House hopeful out of Western New York. New at noon, Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
Republican State Senator Chris Jacobs has picked up some major support in his bid to represent Western New York's 27th Congressional District. President Trump tweeted Tuesday that Jacobs will fight for the people of New York and that he has the Commander-in-Chief's full endorsement. The social media message came shortly after New York State GOP Chair Nick Langworthy met with Mr. Trump and VP Mike Pence at the White House. Jacobs says he's honored and humbled to receive the president's backing and will work to support his agenda should he be elected. A special election to fill the 27th district vacancy is set for April 28th. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. Pennsylvania's large immigrant population could impact the 2020 presidential election. Family Life's Terry Diener continues.
At least 43,000 immigrants have become Pennsylvania citizens since the 2016 presidential election. That's almost as many voters as the margin Trump won by. What that means for the 2020 election isn't clear, but where those voters live in the Commonwealth is an indication of where their votes could make an impact. New American Economy, a pro-immigration think tank based in New York, which crunched the numbers, says the growth of immigrants in Pennsylvania is in the suburbs. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. Coaches, doctors, politicians in New York all butting heads over tackle football.
If we see a danger to our children, we're bound to act to correct it.
That's Assemblyman Michael Benedetto. His bill would ban kids 12 and under from playing tackle football. Otsav Hansball, though, is a sports medicine doctor at Lord's Hospital in Binghamton.
Based on the number of concussions or the number of hits to the head, that would be a better predictor than how long you play a certain sport.
Hansball says the younger the athlete, the bigger the concern for head injuries.
When you have injury to an immature brain, you may theoretically have higher rates of disruption, which may take longer for the brain to heal itself.
Most coaches in the state say getting rid of youth tackle football will only make the game more dangerous for kids at the high school level. Both sides of the plastic bag ban debate in New York sounding off, with less than 2 weeks to go before a statewide ban takes effect.
This is a real milestone in environmental laws. New Yorkers use a staggering 23 billion plastic bags every year.
That's Judy Enck. She's with the group Beyond Plastic. Jim Calvin with the New York State Association of Convenience Stores thinks the bag ban is a bad deal.
I think we're all going to be going through a transition here, and come March 1st, it's going to be a little bit bumpy, and our members' stores are finding that there's a shortage of paper bags, and so they're not necessarily going to be able to find an adequate quantity of paper bags to replace the plastic bags.
Calvin fears customers will ultimately be forced to pay more for groceries as a result of the plastic bag ban in New York. The town of West Manheim, Pennsylvania, now a Second Amendment sanctuary. Last night, supervisors there unanimously approved the measure in the York County community. Hundreds of folks showing up to weigh in.
Guns do not kill people.
Guns have been here for 400 years. Guns aren't the problem. People are the problem.
Town officials voting last night to refuse to cooperate with any gun control law they feel violates the Second Amendment. A similar effort underway in Monroe County, New York, where gun rights advocate Andrew Hollister wants to make that area a gun sanctuary.
People are really feeling like their rights are being infringed on, and they just want to tell Albany, stop it.
Hollister says gun control laws like the SAFE Act violate the U.S. Constitution. That's why he's pushing for counties across the Empire State to be exempt.
We want to have what we believe are our constitutional rights.
I don't see any change that would come from this.
Livingston County Sheriff Tom Doherty says he doesn't support the SAFE Act, but he also doesn't agree with counties being exempt from enforcing it.
Again, I'm a huge supporter of our Second Amendment rights. I just, don't believe that having a sanctuary anything is good policy. I believe in the law and the law of the land.
Several other counties across the state are considering gun sanctuary measures. A spokesman for Governor Cuomo's office calls the effort a farce. A teacher deal finally done in Harrisburg. Both sides have finalized a contract. Union President Jody Barksdale.
We see it as a down payment for our future, and hopefully they're going to have a balanced budget moving forward because they got a handle of the numbers. They know where the revenue's coming from.
A district receiver Dr. Janet Samuels.
It helps to just move us forward, a great springboard to many positive future agreements to come.
The deal includes a bump in pay across the board for teachers in Harrisburg. A bill in the New York State Senate aims to change the way public education is funded by giving property tax relief to some homeowners. Here's Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
The bill would provide nearly $2 billion in tax cuts to homeowners that currently live in school districts that are heavily dependent on property taxes. The proposal would mostly look at expanding the STAR property tax freeze credit. Now, STAR provides rebate checks to homeowners in districts that comply with the 2% property tax cap, and parts of that program are set to expire this year. The relief would only be provided to districts after a final budget has been approved by voters to make sure those funds are only used for tax relief and not additional spending. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Thank you, Jeremy. Another effort to legalize recreational marijuana in Pennsylvania has been introduced in the House in Harrisburg.
Anyone in this Capitol Dome that's refusing to listen to the citizens of this Commonwealth is doing a disservice to the office.
The Democrat Jake Wheatley says his bill would expunge the records of nonviolent drug offenders while funneling much-needed monies into after-school programs. But Republican Kathy Rapp of Warren says the Commonwealth can ill afford to legalize recreational pot.
We've been devastated by the opioid crisis. I do not believe that the people of Pennsylvania want to see another drug added to that crisis.
The governors of both New York and Pennsylvania have come out in support of legalized recreational marijuana. A child has died in Pennsylvania from the flu.
It's absolutely tragic when a child passes away. I'm a pediatrician with my original training, and we're all very saddened.
Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine says the child from Delaware County was a second grader. The experts say while so much attention is given to the coronavirus these days, what folks here should really concern themselves with is the flu.
We are right in the middle of it now, seeing significant rates of illness, tragically deaths, and so we want people to take this very seriously.
85,000 cases of the flu have been reported in Pennsylvania so far this season. In what could be a billion-dollar investment for the southern tier, Lockheed Martin, now poised to build military helicopters and presidential choppers. Congressman Anthony Brindisi says the company's Owego location will be in charge of the presidential fleet.
These helicopters are referred to as Marine One when the president is aboard. And Lockheed Martin and Owego will install the mission equipment package on these aircraft.
Brindisi says the federal funding will include $90 million for a high-energy laser weapon that'll be assembled at Lockheed Martin. Hockey action last night, sunny time. Two-minute drill.
Yeah, let's start on the ice in Ottawa where the Sabres made it close.
In across the line, Larson holds it, gets it to the front of the net, Katapulko scores! The veteran drives the net, and the Sabres get back to within one.
But then fall to the Senators 7-4. In Pittsburgh, the Sidney Crosby Show.
McCann, cross ice feed, Crosby in front, score! Third power play.
Kid had that goal and three assists. The Pens beat the Maple Leafs 5-2. The Penguins, now first place in the Metropolitan Division. Austin Matthews scored his league-leading 43rd goal in the loss for Toronto. In St. Louis, the Blues blanked New Jersey 3-0. Philadelphia, the Flyers blasted the Blue Jackets 5-1. The Flyers have won 4 of 6. Claude Giroux.
That's one of the reasons why we're being successful right now is we're looking at the next shift. We're not looking at the next week that we're going to play. So I think we're doing a good job of getting focused, and before the game, guys were focused, guys were ready, and as shown
in
the first.
In baseball news, Commissioner Rob Manfred is now apologizing for calling the World Series trophy a piece of metal.
I referred to the World Series trophy in a disrespectful way, and I want to apologize for that. There's no excuse for it. I made a mistake. I was trying to make a point, but I should have made it in a more effective way.
New York Yankees' Aaron Judge says he still hurt from that 2017 season.
Once it came out, you know, I was pretty mad, pretty upset. You know, to know that we were probably, you know, cheated out of a possibility of, you know, making it to the World Series.
In the NBA, John Beilein is out as the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Beilein, from Little Burt, New York, started his career at Erie Community College, Nazareth, Lemoyne, and Canisius before heading on to West Virginia, Michigan, and the Cavaliers. Speaking of college basketball, Penn State upset at home by Illinois. Pitt falls to Florida State. West Virginia gets by Oklahoma State. Buffalo beats Ball State. And St. Francis over Robert Morris. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphia.
Getting it done. Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Wednesday edition of the Noon Report, Mike Bloomberg debates tonight. Rod Blagojevich is a free man, and Roger Stone sentenced tomorrow.
One of our nation's foremost historians lies awake at night worrying about us. Why? Because we don't know history. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. According to Pew Research, fewer and fewer American adults have a working historical knowledge of the Holocaust. More than half don't know how many Jews were killed or how Hitler came to power. We'd be foolish to not connect this growing ignorance of history with the rise of anti-Semitism that we see around the world and even in the U.S. right now. In fact, renowned historian David McCullough recently admitted that the connection between our historical forgetfulness and current events keeps him up at night. Specifically, he said, our leaders have forgotten history. They're unaware of the past and uninterested in how they'll be remembered in the future. Now, to be clear, this amnesia we see in our leaders is the fruit of the problem, not the root. The root, as McCullough expressed at the most recent National Book Festival, lies in deeper structural realities, especially the lack of attention given to history in American schools. 80% of our colleges don't require history courses, McCullough lamented before adding, that's wrong. McCullough's right. It is wrong. And it's dangerous. As philosopher George Santayana famously put it, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Unfortunately, we don't seem very committed to remembering the past, as is obvious from how very committed we seem to be to rejecting it, especially anything that smacks of traditional morality. G.K. Chesterton called tradition the democracy of the dead, and he wisely advised, before you remove a fence, you should ask why it's there in the first place. Though our challenges aren't identical to those faced by previous societies, they are similar. In fact, they're essentially variations of the same basic themes. What does it mean to be just? Who is one of us? What do we owe our neighbors? What obligation do we have toward those different from us? What's right and wrong? Who decides? And even if the challenges we face have changed, human nature hasn't. We might believe that we're smarter and better, and as Justice Kennedy liked to say, more morally evolved than our forebears, but that's just prejudice speaking, a version of what C.S. Lewis called chronological snobbery. On the other hand, paying attention to history is a way we acknowledge that our forebears might have learned something about human nature, even if they had to learn the hard way. As I said in a recent commentary on Holocaust Remembrance Day, we're all capable of the evil and the horror on display at places like Auschwitz. A proper knowledge of history and a proper understanding of human fallenness that history gives us is a potent antidote to protect us from our own potential. McCullough offered another important reason for knowing history, one that echoes both Chesterton and Chuck Colson. Knowing history cultivates a sense of gratitude. We're the beneficiaries of those who came before us. As Isaac Newton once said, if I have seen a little further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. And even beyond the crisis of this moment and the cultivation of gratitude, Christians ought to appreciate history because biblical religion is a historical faith. The scriptures tell the story of God's actions, not in a once upon a time far, far away realm of imagination or mystery, but within human history. Since the Exodus, God's people have made remembering and reciting God's historical acts a central part of their life and worship. In fact, as many have said, the entire Old Testament can be summarized with the word remember. So history teaches us about ourselves. It helps us avoid personal and cultural blind spots. It reveals the debt we owe to the past and reminds us of things essential to know about God as He's revealed to us in Scripture. What other reason could we need? For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 minutes past the hour, Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A brisk northwesterly and westerly wind flow will be generating some lake stone flurries over the next 36 hours, with a focus on central New York. Then high pressure will build into the region and set us up for a sunny stretch of weather beginning, if not tomorrow, depending upon lake effects, on Friday and carrying us through the weekend. For this afternoon, brisk and cold, variable amounts of clouds and sunshine, with flurries and localized lake snow. A couple inches in some parts of central New York and south of Lake Ontario. Temperatures, well, they're going to hold steady in the 20s and low 30s across the area. Then tonight and tomorrow, partly cloudy with flurries. Heavier lake snows will accumulate several inches in parts of central New York. Low temperatures, teens, and high temperatures tomorrow in the 20s. Mostly sunshine Friday. High temperatures then near 30.
Okay, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. If you're just joining us, here are some of the stories we're following for you today, Wednesday, February 19th. Mike Bloomberg getting ready for his close-up tonight. The billionaire will take part in his first presidential debate in Vegas. Correspondent Nicole Killian is there.
The Bloomberg campaign has already done a walkthrough of the debate hall, even though he was just added to the lineup. And campaign aides also tell us that former and current staffers have been helping him to prepare by standing in for some of his Democratic rivals who he'll face off against tonight.
So those rivals sharpening their attacks today. Pete Buttigieg says Bloomberg's campaign spending needs to be scrutinized.
Throwing colossal sums of money on television shows you what's wrong with our system.
The top six Democratic presidential candidates will face off tonight from Vegas. It'll start at 9 o'clock on NBC. Former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich praising President Trump for pardoning him.
A lot of communities in America that know what this has been like, to be able to be persecuted and railroaded by a corrupt and frankly racist criminal justice system.
Blagojevich was convicted of trying to sell Barack Obama's old U.S. Senate seat. He served 8 years of a 14-year prison term. Could President Trump pardon his longtime friend Roger Stone when he's sentenced tomorrow? Correspondent Paula Reed
said he hadn't thought about it, but that's hard to believe because the president has spent the last 10 days tweeting repeatedly about the Stone case, about the judge, about the jury, about the sentencing, and he's been asked about half a dozen times about this issue of a possible pardon.
That's Paula Reed reporting. The death toll from the coronavirus has now topped 2,000. All but six of the fatalities have happened inside of China. The communist regime restricting the movement of over 760 million people. That's twice the population of the U.S.
Whether those measures are excessive or whether they're restrictive on people, but there's a lot at stake here.
Infectious disease expert Bob Ryan says the coronavirus now more contagious than MERS or SARS. The virus started in China in December. It's now spread to more than 30 countries. The Boy Scouts of America's bankruptcy filing expected to result in the largest settlement of childhood sex abuse claims in U.S. history. Once again at noon, Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
The move comes after 78 Child Victims Act lawsuits in New York State and others across the country were filed by former scouts who say they were abused by scout leaders. The bankruptcy process would create a victims' compensation trust to provide funds to those abused by scout leaders. The bankruptcy filing is expected to halt the lawsuits in state Supreme Court, leaving it up to a judge in Delaware to determine how much of the Boy Scouts' assets can be used to settle those claims. The lawsuits claim the Boy Scouts failed to keep pedophiles out, did not properly investigate abuse complaints, and kept the identities of many abusers secret. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Okay, Jeremy, a former mail carrier from Pennsylvania sued the Postal Service for firing him after he refused to work on Sundays. Gerald Groff is an evangelical Christian who says his faith prevents him from working on Sundays. His attorney is Randall Wenger.
In a free society, in a free pluralistic society, we should respect everybody's differing religious beliefs.
Water levels dropping today, but there's more rain on the way for parts of the South already decimated by historic flooding. Jackson, Mississippi, under a flash flood watch.
I've never seen it like this before, and I'm just hurt. I just want to see my house.
The schools in eastern Alabama delayed today because of the rain. Overseas now, Queen Elizabeth has apparently taken new action on her grandson and his wife as they move towards independence. from the throne.
Harry and Meghan have reportedly been told to remove the word royal from all their branding since they no longer carry out royal duties. Not clear if the Queen has handed the Duke and Duchess of Sussex a deadline for that. The Sussex Royal website is still very much alive, as is the Sussex Royal Instagram account, which has 11 million followers.
That's Vicky Barker reporting. We are coming up on 25 minutes past the hour. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome back to another edition of Real Answers with Chris Anderson, Wednesdays during the Noon Report. We tackle the tough topics facing today's families with licensed mental health counselor Chris Anderson. And today, Chris, we've got a conversation with a local pediatrician about the challenges facing people living in rural areas, which, you know, our listeners definitely are in many of these different areas. Yeah, we definitely can relate and qualify. And in respect to getting medical care.
So true, Brandon. And I'll tell you what, I am very glad we have this opportunity to address this critical topic. And I sat down recently with Dr. Marlene Woost-Smith, and Marlene is a pediatrician from the Cowdersport, Pennsylvania area down in Potter County. And I asked her about these challenges that people living in rural areas face when they're trying to seek health care. And here's a little bit of that conversation.
Marlene, you've worked in a variety of geographic locations, from the Hamptons on the eastern Long Island to California. So, well, here you are in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
In northwestern Pennsylvania, southwestern New York region, very different from both the Hamptons and the West Coast, wouldn't you say?
Actually, not as different as you would think. One of the things that my husband and my daughter was little at the time that we loved about the Hamptons is that 9 months out of the year, it is rural as rural could be.
Wow.
And they're called Bonnickers, local year-round people who back in the day were fishermen, worked the land, and the Hamptons became the Hamptons, and the need for my services as a pediatrician was primarily in the summer months because mm-hmm. the place becomes invaded with very wealthy people with their families. But 9 months out of the year, there's still a lot of children there that need services, and we love the very rural kind of low-key life. It changed mm-hmm. a lot after 9/11, which is one of the reasons we left, because a lot of people panicked and moved their families out of the city mm-hmm. and to their beautiful homes that they only visited on weekends and in the summer full-time. Mm-hmm. And then it became not the value system we wanted to raise our daughter.
Sure.
But it was interesting because when we moved to Cowdersport, the recruiter said it was close to Rochester and Buffalo. They don't tell you the name of the actual town until you commit to the interview.
Sure.
And we left. And I was here for 4 weeks before I actually left Cowdersport 14 years ago. And I said, I'll just go get my nails done at the mall in Olean, not realizing it was Olean.
And
when I got there, I'm like, Jim, I don't know where we moved to. This is not a mall.
Sure. Exactly. So being in a rural location now, what are the challenges that you're seeing with respect to rural health care and what families face raising their families in an area where health care is lacking?
Right. So it's a geographic issue. So people have needs, medical needs, especially specialists are scarce. In New York City and any major city, you're going to have 3 to 4 to 5 specialists of the same kind in one block radius, depending on which hospital they're affiliated with. Out in rural areas, that just doesn't exist. There's a shortage of primary care physicians. It's predicted that it's going to get worse and worse. I don't know if you're aware, but the government has not funded a single residency position since the 80s. So every year there's 7,000 to 8,000 doctors that graduate medical school mm-hmm. with $250,000 to $500,000 in debt that cannot match in a residency. And we're having fewer and fewer doctors go into specialties because of the low pay of primary care. And I'm biased because I am a primary care physician. I'm a pediatrician by training, but I feel that the most important person is the puzzle solver. Everybody's important in medicine, mm-hmm. but take your family practitioner, your internal medicine, your pediatrician. It may look boring, but we have to know a lot in order to pick out who's not normal and how to reassure. And you're in a field with mm-hmm. the intersection of physical health and behavioral behavioral health is huge. Yeah. So we require a lot of skills, a lot of training, and the pressures are getting higher and higher to do more with less, to see volume instead of quality care, where you get to know your Norman Rockwell poster is why I went into medicine. I want to know.
You want to know your patients. Yes. Sure.
And Dr. Wu Smith will have the ear of the president as she will be meeting with Mr. Trump next month as well.
That's right. She's going to be heading on down to Mar-a-Lago in Florida with a group of physicians that are trying to affect very important healthcare measures that will really make getting coverage easier and other things as well. So I'm really excited about that. And then next time, Brandon, on Real Answers, we'll do a follow-up, actually, about what you can do to be, let's say, a good patient. In other words, you get into a primary care provider, and we'll give you some tips on how following these guidelines can help you maintain a good relationship with your primary care provider.
We look forward to exploring that once again in the next version of Real Answers. You've been listening to another edition with Chris Anderson. Of course, it airs Wednesdays during the noon report. We tackle the tough topics facing today's families with Christian counselor Chris Anderson.
Thank you, guys. Real Answers comes your way Wednesdays during the noon report.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A brisk northwesterly and westerly wind flow will be generating some lake stone flurries over the next 36 hours with a focus on central New York. Then high pressure will build into the region and set us up for a sunny stretch of weather beginning, not tomorrow, depending upon lake effects, on Friday and carrying us through the weekend. For this afternoon, brisk and cold, variable amounts of clouds and sunshine, with flurries and localized lake snow. A couple inches in some parts of central New York and south of Lake Ontario. Temperatures, well, they're going to hold steady in the 20s and low 30s across the area. Then tonight and tomorrow, partly cloudy with flurries. Heavier lake snows will accumulate several inches in parts of central New York. Low temperatures, teens, and high temperatures tomorrow in the 20s. Mostly sunshine Friday. High temperatures then near 30.
Okay, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. Finally at noon, a picture of a puppy and a pigeon snuggling together is touching the hearts of millions. That's because the 8-week-old Chihuahua can't walk and the bird can't fly, but together they are perfect.
I took Herman out of his playpen to give him some time out, and I put him in a dog bed. Then I had to tend to Lundy, so I put Lundy in with him. They just looked really cute together, so I took some pictures.
They do look cute. That's Sue Rogers with the Mia Foundation in Rochester, New York. She says the photos have resulted in over $6,000 in donations to her animal rescue center. That is the world we live in. This Wednesday, as always, thanks for joining us. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.